Our usual pattern here on Wednesday lunchtimes is to go systematically through part of the Bible and examine its message for us. But this month we're stepping back and we're asking a big question: how can we know what's true? Or even, is there such a thing as truth? Last week we looked at the assumption that lots of people make today, that all truth is relative. And therefore there's no such thing really as absolute truth, true truth, at all. Today we're looking at the other big assumption which people make, which might seem like the totally opposite point of view. And that is the assumption that there is such a thing as truth, and we can work it out using human reason alone. Rationalism means more than being rational. It means that reason becomes our ultimate authority over what's true. In particular, for the rationalist, human reason is more reliable than what God says. The new atheists like Richard Dawkins and Philip Pullman have breathed new life into rationalism over the last few years. But the starkest statement I've read is in this book by Bertrand Russell, written more than 80 years ago originally. And I've printed a slab of it there on your handout. Let's read it together, shall we? Bertrand Russell writes, "Science can teach us, and I think our own hearts can teach us, no longer to look round for imaginary supports, no longer to invent allies in the sky, but rather to look to our own efforts here below to make this world a fit place to live in, instead of the sort of place that the churches in all these centuries have made it. We want to stand upon our own feet and look fair and square at the world, conquer the world by intelligence, and not merely by being slavishly subdued by the terror that comes from it. The whole conception of God is a conception quite unworthy of free men." Do you see the assumptions that are made there? Of course, it assumes that the world has truth and meaning, which is waiting to be discovered. It assumes, too, that human reason or science is able to discover it. And it assumes that we're free to use reason logically and impartially. Like relativism last week, can you see that rationalism is a very attractive view of the world? It seems to have a hard-headed logic about it. It seems much more reasonable than what Russell describes as imaginary supports and invented allies in the sky. Surely being scientific has to be the best way to find out about the truth. Well, I wonder whether you're persuaded of rationalism. Or if you're not, what about your friends and colleagues? How would you answer them? Well, science is built on two things. It's built on logic and data. Data is the empirical evidence about the world, but logic is needed to interpret that data and to string it together into a theory. And I want to persuade us today that rationalism fails on both levels. First of all, a failure of logic. Rationalism is not rational. Both rationalism and relativism assume that if there is such a thing as truth, then human reason will be able to understand it, helped by no one else. I've put that assumption there on the sheet in that little table. And as you can see from the two ticks under rationalism, actually our titles have slipped to the right. So rationalism should be over those first two ticks on the table. A rationalist assumes that if there is such a thing as truth, and they believe that there is, therefore human reason will lead to us grasping it. Can you see the problem, though? That assumption, that if A is true, then B necessarily follows, cannot be demonstrated by human reason alone. To the rationalist, it seems self-evident, but it can't be proved scientifically. It depends, in fact, on a leap of faith. Think about it like this. My little boy Timothy went through a phase when he asked why about everything. Maybe you've had a small child that goes through the same phase. Why to everything? Why do I have to tidy up now? Because I need to get you ready for bed. Why? Well, because it's nearly time for bed. Why? Because you need your sleep. Why? Because I just say so, all right? Now, the rationalist, if you keep asking the question why, and pushing the grounds for knowledge back and back, ends up saying, because I say so. And that's not very rational, is it? We said last week that a great question to ask any view of the world is it consistent? And like relativism, rationalism has a glaring inconsistency right at its core. Its basic assumption cannot be proved from within the system. It fails at the level of logic. Now, before we move on, just notice how that little diagram on the sheet helps us too with relativism, I think. Rationalism and relativism actually share that same basic assumption that if there's such a thing as truth, we'll be able to work it out using human reason alone. Rationalism is the optimist's answer. Yes, there is such a thing as truth, and yes, we can understand it. Relativism, by contrast, reflects a disillusionment, a pessimism with our understanding of the world, and so it answers no to both premises. There isn't such a thing as absolute truth, and so we can't understand the world. If rationalism is a confident tower of Jenga, relativism is that Jenga tower collapsed down in disaster. Now, actually, as Christians, we agree with the rationalist that there is such a thing as truth. But in fact, we have more reason to believe it than the rationalist has. You see, we're convinced that there is a good, unchanging God who made an ordered universe. And that's a reassurance that the rationalist can't share. Rationalism fails at the level of logic. But the rationalist's problem is also one of data. You see, although God has made us with some power of logical thought, the Bible tells us that we can't trust our own reason. You see, Christian revelation in Jesus and in the Bible agrees with the first premise. There is such a thing as truth, because God has made an ordered universe. But it disagrees profoundly with the empirical truth of the second premise. We cannot understand it by human reason alone. You see, it's not just that rationalism is not rational, it's that rationalists are not rational. And to see that, let's look back at John 8, the passage that we have printed on the sheet there and which Brian read to us. Do you see that Jesus says our knowledge of the truth comes not from human reason, but from his own message? There in the very first few words, Jesus said, if you hold to my teaching, then you are really my disciples. Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Truth is revealed in the first instance, according to Jesus, rather than conquered by intelligence, as Bertrand Russell puts it. And the reason for that is that whereas Bertrand Russell assumes that we're free already, Jesus Christ disagrees. We become free when we hold to his teaching. In our natural state, we're slaves, says Jesus. Just look at verse 34 there. Jesus said, I tell you the truth, everyone who sins is a slave to sin. He means that everyone who follows their own desires, wanting to satisfy themselves in whatever way seems to best to them without reference to God, is enslaved to those desires. Now, that's most obvious maybe in cases of addiction. The addict craves their next hit, don't they? They become controlled by their need for the thing that they're addicted to. They can't help themselves but overcome every obstacle, sacrificing relationships, their health, their money, and the truth itself in order to satisfy their desire. Anyone here who's battled with an addiction of your own or have helped someone through an addiction will know exactly what I mean. What Jesus is saying is that we're all naturally addicts of one form or another. It's just that some of us have socially acceptable addictions and some of us have socially unacceptable addictions. One person's addiction to drink or drugs will be another person's addiction to their career, or their addiction to the respect of others, their addiction to their idea of a successful family, or whatever it might be. We find out what our addiction is when we ask ourselves what we're sacrificing everything else in order to try to satisfy. The point of Jesus' analysis of the human heart is to show us that we're not the free men and women that we think we are. You see, we don't stand impartially on the sidelines of the game of life and try to work out scientifically whether there's a God or not and how we should live. If life is a sports match, we aren't the detached and unbiased referee. We are fiercely competitive players, aren't we? And just as in sports matches, competitors frequently see reality differently. You might have seen Serena Williams fiercely contesting the umpire at the US Open earlier this week. Well, it's just the same in the game of life. We have an inbuilt bias in the way we perceive reality. We use reason to rationalise our desires. Studies have shown that purchasing decisions are not made first and foremost by reason, but by want, and then we rationalise it. So at risk of gender stereotyping, we men, I'm sure, can recognise that process of rationalising desires when our wives come home with a new pair of shoes. And our wives will recognise it in us when we turn up with an iPad or some new gadget or whatever. Desire first, rationalising it afterwards. Isn't that right? We aren't as rational as we like to think. Now, to the non-Christian, the Christian way of life will look like slavery. We imagine that it's a life of being told what we can't do. And we hate the idea of not being able to run our own lives the way we want to, whether it's the implications for our relationships, or for our career, or for our self-esteem. Our human instincts fight against the idea that there is a God who will direct our lives. We want to be the bosses of our lives. And so, just like relativism last week, can you see that rationalism is a bid for autonomy? You see, if I can work the world out for myself, I don't need a God. I am all I need. One of the things that drives Bertrand Russell's critique of Christianity, it seems, is a refusal to accept he's a sinner. He goes straight on from the passage that I've already quoted to say, when you hear people in church debasing themselves and saying that they're miserable sinners and all the rest of it, it seems contemptible and not worthy of self-respecting human beings. Do you see that behind his atheism seems to lie pride and a desire for autonomy? That's exactly what Jesus says in this passage in John's Gospel, isn't it? Look at verse 43, down there towards the end. Verse 43, Jesus says, "Why is my language not clear to you? Because you are unable to hear what I say." It's not that they're physically deaf, they're in the middle of a dialogue with him, an argument with him. It's that they can't digest it. They can't bear to hear it. Their bias, their commitment to sin, makes them metaphorically stick their fingers in their ears when Jesus says something that they don't want to hear. And the rationalist today does the same thing. Jesus makes it even more pointed in verse 45. It's because he tells the truth that they don't believe. So much for being rational. One writer puts it this way: either we conform the truth to our desires, or we conform the desires, our desires to the truth. The non-Christian, says Jesus, conforms the truth to their desires. So rationalism fails, not just because it's irrational as a logical theory, it also fails because one of its central data assumptions, that people are free and rational, is also wrong. rationalists are irrational. Every non-Christian worldview depends on assumptions from outside its system which cannot be proved from within it. We've seen that for both rationalism and for relativism. And so whilst we would want to affirm, as Christians, we would want to affirm some of the conclusions of both worldviews, we need something else. We need revelation from outside. All I've done today and last week is to try to deconstruct what I believe to be wrong views of the world. But over the next 2 weeks, we're going to examine what claims to offer that revelation from outside. The revelation of God in Jesus Christ as God the Son, and the revelation of God in the words of the Bible. So I hope you can come back next week and the week after to hear those talks. I want to finish today, though, by applying what we've seen. First application, don't be a rationalist. Don't be a rationalist. We've seen the problems with rationalism. In particular, we've seen our slavery to sin, our bias, which means that we're far from free to draw conclusions about the world and about ultimate reality. Surprisingly, it's not just Jesus who tells us this. Some of the most prominent atheists are honest enough to admit it. The radical atheist Nietzsche wrote, "It is our preference that decides against Christianity, not arguments." One of the most respected living philosophers, Thomas Nagel, recently wrote, "I want atheism to be true and am made uneasy by the fact that some of the most intelligent and well-informed people I know are religious believers. It isn't just that I don't believe in God and naturally hope that I'm right in my belief. It's that I hope there is no God. I don't want there to be a God." If you would describe yourself as an atheist, as a rationalist, can you see in yourself any flicker of that desire for there not to be a God? Is there any part of you that might be using rationalism as a means to justify your unwillingness to accept God's claim on your life? You are not as rational as you think you are. In fact, your commitment to reason only makes sense if there is a God who made an ordered universe and who gave you intelligence. So if you're genuinely rational and committed to searching for the truth based on reason, have you examined the evidence for the truth of Christianity? Will you come back next week and the week after as we start to unpack some of the evidence for revealed truth? But it's not just the atheist who might be a rationalist. Did you notice who Jesus is speaking to in John chapter 8? We're told in the very first verse there on the sheet, "To the Jews who had believed in him, Jesus said these things." How many of us would say we believe in God? How many of us call ourselves Christians, but really are rationalists at heart? You see, it's perfectly possible to call ourselves Christian because we grew up in church, or we regard it as socially respectable, or because we like the ritual, and yet we reject the authoritative claim of Jesus Christ on our lives. Remember that even Richard Dawkins says that he likes going to church. So maybe you call yourself a Christian, but you're more willing to trust your own reason than what revelation claims. In particular, do you find yourself trying to rationalize behavior which the Bible seems to condemn? Maybe that will be in the area of sexual ethics. Well, God is love, and therefore he wouldn't want me to deny my feelings, and after all, we're committed to each other. Maybe that will be in the area of career. It's good for Christians to be in influential positions in society. If I get my head down and get promotion, then I'll have much more money to give away and I'll be able to be a role model for others. As you sacrifice your family and your spiritual health for the sake of personal ambition. A friend of mine once told me, well, it's good for my evangelism, isn't it, that my friends can see that Christians can go out and get drunk as well. Figure that one out if you can. Where do you find yourself rationalizing something which might otherwise be described as sin? Using reason is good, but when it starts to contradict what God has said, that's when we've become a rationalist. Don't be a rationalist. And second implication, learn to speak to rationalists. With relativists, as we saw last week, Christians are in danger of coming across as hard-nosed and cold. But to the rationalist, we'll actually sound soft-headed and romantic, won't we? And so for the rationalists, we'll need to emphasise that our convictions are based on evidence, that they aren't just based on wishful thinking. That even though we might be able to say that Christianity feels true and our subjective experience of it helps to confirm our faith, actually the truth of the Christian message is based on convictions about objective reality outside of our own feelings. But as we do that, as we reassure the rationalist that there are reasons for what we believe, don't forget that the rationalist at heart is not rational. So before you spend all your energy trying to convince the rationalist on the basis of evidence, first ask them some questions. Ask them whether they want there to be a God or not. If they're honest, they'll admit that they aren't impartial on the matter. Are they willing to believe if they find sufficient evidence? Ask them what evidence they would regard as sufficient and why they think that's a fair standard of evidence and whether they apply the same standard of evidence to their knowledge about everything else. I was talking to a Jewish lady a little while ago at one of the city law firms, and she said that she didn't believe in anything that she couldn't confirm by her own experience. So I said, can that really be true? Oh yes, she said. So the obvious response, which with hindsight was a little bit blunt and it didn't persuade her, but the obvious response was to say, well, so you don't believe in the Holocaust then? As we're questioning people's basic assumptions, as we're presenting what we believe to be sufficient evidence to trust in Jesus Christ as God, remember his own words. Why is my language not clear to you? Because you are unable to hear what I say. Because I tell the truth, you do not believe me. Reason alone won't persuade someone to believe. The greatest teacher the world has ever known didn't persuade all of his hearers, and neither were we. What's needed actually is a miracle. And although rationalists don't believe in miracles, we do. And we can speak to the one who does them.